The other night, I was chatting to a good friend of mine here in Kuala Lumpur, and his demeanor really inspired me to make this video. He said to me that life is great, except he's just not enjoying his job, and it's the bane of his life right now, and that he wants to go and do his own thing, and he wants to start, he thinks, an online business to give him all the benefits he perceives to come with that, such as the location dependence, the bang for buck on time, not having to work all hours of the day, all that good stuff. And I thought today I'm going to make the kind of video I want to make to him and to people like him, people at the very first step who have this idea, they know that they want this thing that is digital business or online business, making money online, but they have no idea where to start. And I realize that maybe a lot of my videos go into a lot of depth, but today I really just want to give a high level, almost basic overview of what people are doing, what avenues people are using to make money online, how they're doing it, and maybe even go into the pros and cons of each as I see it. I'm going to be very honest with you as I go through as to which ones I've actually done and can speak from experience, and which ones I've merely known others do and can only speak from what I observe. But I'll make that clear as I go through. So without further ado, here we go. In my opinion, there are, in my view even, there are, roughly speaking, seven main routes to making money online. Now, this is an abundance of opportunity. There's so many ways you can do this. And it really helps, I think, to have a very rough idea of which of these seven sits best with you. And like I said, there's advantages and disadvantages to each of them. Just try and get a feel for which of those you would have a preference for. So the first is simply freelancing. So whatever it is you do right now, it's probable that can be done online for someone else. Doesn't have to be your existing employer. You could do that same thing for anyone. It could be that you're an architect, could be that you're a graphic designer, software programmer. It literally doesn't matter. A virtual assistant. There are several online platforms whereby you can hire and be hired as a freelancer, Upwork.com being one of the main ones. Fiverr with two R's is also one of the main ones. And from what I observe, people are making money via these platforms. I use them as a employer, and they're just an absolute boon. Like I would never really even want to hire anyone via any other means right now. You know, for me, as being in e-commerce, being probably my main business, all I want to do is hire freelancers. I have no desire to hire anyone internal. It's just, I've tried it in the past. It's just been more trouble than it's worth. At least for me, in my business, the way I operate, the way my business operates, just freelancing, you know, is the way to go. In terms of pros and cons, well, clearly, this is still a business, the business of you, but one of the downsides would be that you're not really building a business as such. You're not building an asset which you're going to later sell, and you are, in many respects, still trading your time for money. You're not necessarily building something that can work for you whilst you sleep. If you don't work, you don't make money, you know, if we're taking freelancing in its purest form. But of course, the positive side of it is that you can pretty much apply any skill via the route of freelance. I mean, think outside the box. You know, I'm an example of someone who only wants to hire freelancers. And I do believe that the way the world's going, a lot more traditional businesses will also be thinking this way. Not only outsourcing more, outsourcing has been around for decades, of course, but doing it more and more and doing it for more key tasks. That's just the trajectory the world's going. Corporate work is becoming more onerous. Working for yourself is becoming more appealing via the route of technology and automation. It's just, you've got these two opposing trends, and the pressure to move from one to the other is just growing all the time. Another downside of freelancing, of course, in my view, is that generally speaking, you're probably not going to make as much money, but it can be a very useful bridge to other forms of making money online. It can certainly keep you afloat as you do it. So that's freelancing. Second would be on a similar tip, so I've put these in a somewhat logical order, a digital agency. So all that means is that rather than being the freelancer, you're project managing the freelancers essentially. Again, comes with a lot of versatility. Your agency can specialize in any number of areas, whether it's digital marketing or any sub niche within that, whether that's pay-per-click, SEO, website building social media. I mean, any one of those is huge. Digital marketing is just a gigantic field with an abundance of different specialisms within it. But that seems to be something that seems to be working for other people very well. It's not something I do, although I suppose in my personal experience, I've kind of done a lot of things that, if pieced together, would account for. Like, I do a lot of hiring for my own business. I do a lot of project management of personnel within my own business. I also have done a lot of client management in other things, but never together. But nonetheless, from what I see, other people have been very successful running digital agencies. And actually, this is a particular opportunity that I'm personally very excited about. If ever I did have to switch or expand, I'm actually very passionate about making content right now, as you probably gathered watching my video. But this is one that I would seriously consider. I think the market for labor in the West, so particularly like leveraging very competent, good value Eastern labor in Western markets, that is an opportunity that's just it's only scratched the surface, but it's barely been exploited at all, relative to say something like e-commerce, which is essentially the same thing for products, right? So just to summarize, agency, I suppose one of the downsides is that ultimately you're still managing clients. So you're still beholden to them. So in the pursuit of freedom, there's a slight deduction there in that you may have to attend calls when you perhaps don't necessarily want to. You may occasionally be called to go to places, depending on how much value you place on that within your business, how much value your clients place on that. There's an argument there to train your clients to appreciate that maybe they don't need you in person, because a lot of old school players are still thinking like, oh, we've always got to meet up. Just simply not true. So there is an element of that. But hey, if you like meeting clients, that's absolutely not even a consideration. Personally, I'm very much towards one end of the spectrum, probably more extreme than most people, in that I like to really be in control of my own time more than 95% of people. So probably adding my own biases here. But in terms of positives, very low capital to set up. It's still something you can then sell as an asset. It's still a business you can sell. It doesn't have your face on it necessarily. So take that combination, low capital and sellable, that's a winning combination if I ever saw one. And of course, extremely flexible, all manner of things you can apply digital agency to. And it's also very scalable. You know, the sky's the limit. I mean, Gary Vaynerchuk is the CEO of a digital agency. You know, a digital agency can be 3 people, 2 people, it can be 5,000 people. The sky really is the limit. Thirdly, e-commerce, equally huge area. So I don't want to spend too long on each one here, but e-commerce is essentially where you're selling physical products. Digital agency is when you're essentially selling labor, in a nutshell. E-commerce is when you're selling physical products. What that has meant in practice for most people, a very large percentage of them are selling on Amazon. That's where they're finding their demand. Amazon.com, largely in the States, also UK, DE, France, a little bit of Spain, Germany, also areas like Japan. Australia's just waking up. India, China, if you're an expert in those areas. If you're from the West, proceed with caution. But it is largely on Amazon, also on Shopify. Shopify is not really a marketplace, it's more of a website building platform with a built-in checkout. But it makes things a lot easier, and they also help. There's a lot of good content they put out, for example, essentially just on your own website. That's what Shopify means. Marketing it yourself. I've known of a lot of people have success selling on Shopify, marketing via Facebook. That seems to be a winning combination. Not one I've done a lot of. My thing's more been Amazon. Had huge success with Amazon. My biggest business is an Amazon business. And again, we've had good success marketing our physical products via Facebook, not necessarily selling them directly on Facebook, but more leveraging Facebook as a way to get them better ranked within Amazon and get more attention, new customers to Amazon, and customers that will join our list and or come back for more business. So Facebook is more of a customer acquisition exercise rather than a direct profitable selling exercise. With e-commerce, one thing I also meant to mention there is that, so I talked about the demand side of things, where the stuff's actually being sold. In terms of supply, again, a large percentage of products are being sourced from Asia. So what's happened in recent years, the reason at the heart of why a lot of everyday folks have become small business owners, entrepreneurs, if they want to call themselves that, you know, setting their own schedule, writing their own paycheck, working from anywhere, is very simply because they're leveraging this east-west differential. Just like with labour, which hasn't really been exploited yet, one reason I'm so excited about agencies, they've simply leveraged the fact that you can buy products really cheap in China and India, places around there, and sell them at a bit of a markup in the West. You can add value. Firstly, there's value adding and actually finding good products. There's a lot of bad products out there. There's a lot of bad manufacturing out there. And there is value added in you being a somewhat of a filter in that. Secondly, in helping people learn how to use it. Thirdly, in the market, in the branding. And fourthly, but certainly not least, in selling those products that need to be sold. Selling in those niches that are underexploited and doing a service in doing that. So giving people something they wouldn't necessarily have at a price they wouldn't necessarily have it at if you had not come on the scene and filled that niche and solved that problem. One of the downsides of an e-commerce business is, first of all, the capital required. So in my first ever e-commerce project, I put aside merely a few thousand pounds, launched one product, did okay, sold it for a 24-month multiple on profit, and then moved on to my next project. You could do it with a million. You could launch one product with £5,000. How long's a piece of string? The point is you're going to need some capital, usually to the tune of at least a few thousand pounds, to launch a product or two. That's just unavoidable if you're buying stock, setting aside maybe a third of your budget for marketing. You can either make that obviously your own money, or you can pitch your investment. As a guide there, how much to give away? Again, how long is a piece of string? I've got a friend who got a $250,000 investment and only gave away 20% of his business. In other cases, it's been known that some people will simply put up the money and the other guy will do the work and they'll do a 50-50 split. It just depends. Just be aware, if you are getting investment, that you're going to be responsible for that investment. And that's not necessarily the most conducive route to achieving freedom, if that is what you want. It may be better to either save your own money or look at one of the other multitude of opportunities here that I'm outlining for you. Having said that, whilst there is a need for capital, one of the plus sides of e-commerce is that if you do it right, the ROCE tends to be very high. The return on capital employed tends to produce quite high figures if you do it well, and obviously that's a big caveat. Make sure you learn from those who've walked the path before you. That's really important in e-commerce, doing things right, marketing it right. But as a rule of thumb for me, in any project, particularly e-commerce, I want to see an ROCE of 10% a month on the investment. So if you're putting in £10,000, you want to deplete that capital and turn that into a system, a machine, a business that will then produce you £1,000 a month profit, at least. And it could be £2,000, could be a bit less on that, but on average, you really want to be hitting for at least 10% ROCE. There you go. There's a super simple tip for you. But of course, another couple of positives here. Firstly, extremely scalable. There's work that goes in at the front end of developing products, building brands, and also in optimizing brands and also in maintaining products. But a lot of the work goes in the front end, which thus makes this very scalable. And you will find the need to employ people as you grow and progress. But hey, like Procter & Gamble are a physical product company, mostly in store. But there's all kinds of companies that are doing hundreds, like Quest Nutrition, right, on it. You know, these are gigantic, several hundred million pound dollar companies that are e-commerce companies. There's also ones that are merely just profiting a few hundred pounds a month. So again, highly scalable, really are no limits there. And finally, extremely sellable. You're building a brand, you're building an asset that can then be sold. You might sell that for a 24, a 36 times multiple if you're an Amazon business. If you're a long established brand, maybe a 60 month multiple, maybe more. So there's a lot of scope for building an asset. And there's also an argument for flipping. So either buying e-commerce businesses and selling them on, or selling them as soon as possible and then using the capital to build a new one. Moving on. So number four, content, making content, whether that's YouTube, making videos, whether that's podcasts. I think a very unexploited area right now. Podcasts seems to be very heavy on demand relative to supply in my perception. And of course, blogging. These things have been around for a long time. What I love about this avenue to making money online is there's nothing more personal. There's nothing that invites you more to be yourself. There should be no lack of integrity here. All you got to do is show up and be yourself. There's definitely an argument to simply do that. It's called attraction marketing. Turn up, be who you want to be. Those who resonate with you will stick around. Those who don't will go. What does it matter? You know, ultimately, to do your best work, you got to be yourself. And how this is monetized, well, of course, there's a lot of ways combining a lot of the methods of making money that I'm discussing here. Content on its own, obviously advertising, all three of those routes I mentioned, blogging, video, podcast, a lot of them have sponsorship. There's also the option to say have like Google Ads on your site, so you just get revenue from the hits, same with YouTube. And that also bridges into the ability to sell other things. So content production not only is monetizable by itself, but it's often a bridge to other forms of monetization, such as getting freelance work, such as getting agency work, such as selling physical products, right? Such as affiliate marketing, selling digital products. So there's just all manner of ways in which that can work. One of the drawbacks of being a purely content focused business is that it's rather difficult to sell, if not is completely unsellable, because if you are the face of the brand, without you, there's no brand. If you are the brand, then that's clearly an asset that's going to be rather difficult to sell. Unless it was something like, so take for example, Tony Robbins has a blog and a podcast, and he doesn't really appear in it very much at all. Most of it's done by other people. And so in that case, he is the brand, but he isn't actually required to contribute. These are people that have been vetted by him who can show up and deliver the value without him being there. So that's one way which can be done. So that's content. All manner of ways which you can go with that, of course, a huge area. Number five route to making money online is affiliate marketing. If you're new to this, you've probably heard the words affiliate marketing many times. It's very simply selling other people's products. Generally, this means digital products, but not necessarily. Affiliate marketing physical products is still a big thing. So, for example, using an Amazon Associates link, if someone clicks via a link that you've given them, you get 15% of the sale. The more lucrative route to affiliate marketing, however, is generally speaking selling digital products. And this ties in with the content piece, because many people do affiliate marketing on the side as a way of serving their audience, because it's a tricky balance. You don't really want to just be selling all the time because no one's interested in that. It's more about adding value first and then selling maybe 10 to 20% of the time if you want to, if that fits with your brand, and hopefully if you feel that's genuinely going to be of service to your customers. I mean, as a pervasive tenant to all of these, I believe that you've really got to show up and serve first, get paid for doing that. If you turn up in any of these pursuits, in life in general, any business, purely with the intention of making money, you're going to burn out very fast, believe me. Seen it happen. Partner with people who were of that mindset, didn't work, they just wanted to get rich quick, and that really percolated through into their actions. Do not kill the goose that lays the golden egg. Show up, deliver value, do that first. Promote when it's useful to your audience. And by virtue of that, you may or may not get paid. Okay, so, but having said all that, affiliate marketing can be pursued almost as the primary venture, almost on its own. There are many outfits, channels out there which exist purely to drive traffic to links that other people have created. There are even affiliate marketers who do not even put their face on things. They step back entirely. they gain traffic through pay-per-click means, such as through Facebook ads, any kind of social media advertising, maybe even Google AdWords, so bidding on search terms. And they might get very, very good at that and might figure out a way to actually find digital products, maybe via clickbank.com. Check out clickbank.com, really interesting to check out. Even if you have no intention of affiliate marketing, it's just really good to know about these things. And they might run some sort of ad to that. I actually had some small scale success with this myself once on a very, again, really small scale. I was just testing things, but I found I did a couple of things. I found one project I was involved in a while back was a psoriasis holiday company. And I thought, let's just try selling some psoriasis-based digital products, how to heal people from psoriasis. And I think by the time I spent £20 in advertising costs, I'd made £40 in revenue. For a number of reasons, that didn't last. It didn't seem to scale. And actually, my account got shut down for other reasons because of another affiliate marketing scheme I was trying via Facebook. So I wasn't able to continue that project. But in its early form, it seemed to kind of work. But I've got limited experience of affiliate marketing on its own. Negatives here, it's largely unsellable if it's got your face in it. Same thing with content. In my personal view, I am not a fan of businesses that exist purely to sell other people's products, because I think there's always a compromise there on integrity. Sorry if that offends anyone. It's not for me. I believe that the more you pollute something with the desire to sell, just to sell, the less real value there will be in that. It's far better if you can sell things because they're of genuine use to your audience. And I mean genuine, you're not just telling yourself that because you want to sell stuff. Again, it's really all about delivering value. So just my opinion there. But actually, on the plus side, it can be very personal, right? You know, if you really do believe in what it is you're selling and it is of genuine use to the customer and you're not overdoing it, then affiliate marketing can be a lovely way to be, especially if you love to engage with people, sometimes one-on-one, but particularly via content. It can also be very lucrative. So, I mean, again, pick a number. There are people who make millions affiliate marketing, literally. And it's also very scalable. Once you find a product that works, once you find a marketing means that works, once you say the right audience and right selection of options on Facebook ads, hey, like, you're putting £1 in, you're getting £2 out, guess what, you scale. The only limit is how many people there are to physically look at your advert. And maybe there's some sort of expiry date on the product itself, maybe in a year's time people won't be as interested in that, or something better will come along. But within that set of parameters, very scalable, and then you just rinse and repeat. Once you get good at it, it's one of these things you can just go and do over and over again. I did actually have some other successes with affiliate marketing, and I was putting money into that and it was working, but I then realized my e-commerce project was actually a better use of money, so I actually decided to put more into that, more money and more time in that. And so that's number five. Number six is digital products. By this, I mean selling premium content, especially educational resources, how to do what you do. I mean, what are you an expert at? What is it you can help people with? This could be anything. I mean, there's a course on Udemy of someone selling an equestrian Tai Chi course. It doesn't get much more obscure than that, and they're making a lot of money, right? At the other end of the spectrum, there's a lot of people selling how to make money on Amazon courses, how to do e-commerce, how to do Shopify courses. They're making a lot of money too. Again, don't be put off just because there's a lot of supply. Sometimes a large supply can be representative of a large demand. What you've really got to look at is the ratio of those two, or get a feel for whether there's a gap you can fill, whether there's a qualitative niche you can do, whether there's something you can provide that someone else hasn't provided, or whether there's just a quantitative excess of demand that isn't quite being filled yet. Both of those are worthy pursuits. One of the drawbacks here is that I've never actually sold premium content. So I'm purely here speaking from what I observe, what I see others doing, the facts that I can see, as well as my perception of it. But on the plus side, it's a low barrier to entry. I really think that just from talking to people and also from looking at marketplaces like Udemy.com, there's a lot more people out there who seem to want to launch e-commerce businesses. There are far fewer people out there who want to launch online courses, it would seem to me, to my perception, just because I think more people are comfortable with selling products. You know, they like to take a step back. Not everyone wants to get out a screen and record themselves doing a course. I think it takes a certain kind of person, maybe a certain kind of skill set, to actually stand up and educate in front of a whiteboard or a screen or whatever it is. It's just not for everyone. The process of doing it is not for everyone. That's fine by me. I have big ambitions to launch digital product or digital courses and digital products. I can't wait. I can't wait to knuckle down. Another huge advantage to doing digital products and courses is that there's a very low barrier to entry. Sorry, there's a very low capital requirement. Hey, look, a few bits of equipment, maybe a decent microphone, maybe a decent screen, and some time, maybe a week set aside to record the thing. There's not a huge amount of capital required, maybe some marketing, but compared to something like e-commerce, the actual capital outlay is really not that large, and yet you still have a digital asset, something that remains, a piece of digital property that stays there, can generate money day in, day out, week after week. Once you've built it, that's it. It's like building a house. The hard work goes in at the front end. When it's there, it's done. You advertise it, market it, sell it, but the bulk of the value is given at the front end. And that's one of the beautiful things about digital business is that you don't have to be there for the value to be received. You don't have to be there educating someone. You can show up, do it once, and you can send it to as many people as you like. So I'm a big fan of the concept. Can't wait to try it. Lastly, route to making money online, number 7. This is very, generally speaking, trading / investing. So this could be trading the markets. This could be buying and selling gold and silver. This could be stocks. This could be cryptocurrency. And this could be trading, or this could be investing. So this could be, i.e. shorter term trades, buying what's undervalued, selling what's overvalued. Or this could be longer term investments, educating yourself, doing research, getting in early on something, selling when it blows up. Again, this could be bullion, like the price of silver. Most people think is pretty undervalued right now. Many cryptocurrencies, some people would believe, are undervalued right now. Other people think it's just going to go away. So one thing that unites this is definitely the need to research, to make up your own opinions, because opinions vary. Go out there, look at the facts, listen to other people, make your own mind up. The more you do that, the better judgments you make. Go into this realizing that you are going to win some, you are going to lose some, but the better your fundamental analysis, i.e. the better you understand the point of the project, the people behind it, what it's trying to do, and the better you understand your technical analysis, i.e. what the charts are looking like. Is it looking undervalued right now, oversold, undersold? What's the average, right? These kinds of things. The better you can marry those two up, the better you get at each of those or one of those, the better decisions you're going to make. The bigger your wins are going to be, the more often you're going to win, and the less you're going to lose and the smaller your losses are going to be, hopefully. That's the principle. I'm actually a fan of this. I bought into cryptocurrency in 2013. I also tried mining. That was a bit of a waste of time. built quite an expensive computer that didn't really work properly and then very quickly became unprofitable. Would have been much better just put that £1,200 or so into Bitcoin. God, a lot better off if I'd done that. Fortunately, I did put some money into Bitcoin and some others at the time. So, downsides. Highly technical, analytical pursuit is this, trading and investing. Also, plus side, if you're someone who is very analytical and quite technically minded and is frustrated with the world and how the world is always trying to shoehorn you into doing things that don't require analysis, and that, then maybe look, getting good at trading, getting good at investing, maybe that's something for you. But if you're not of that mindset, I would just proceed with caution. You know, this really does benefit from hard analysis. Doesn't benefit so well from superstition, and although gut feeling might have a place, as long as it can be traced back somewhere to some form of concrete analysis. Another downside is that many of these things can be very volatile, particularly cryptocurrency right now, really, really up and down a lot. you've got to get in for positive expected value. In other words, you've got to be able to take the losses with the wins, accept them as an inevitable part of the cycle, but engineer things, configure things so that you win more than you lose. That's it. That's all investing and trading is. It's playing roulette, but it's playing roulette with a roulette table where 60% of the numbers are red, right? You'd be crazy not to play in some respects, as long as you know that you're making the right decision, as long as you can actually see the board clearly. I'm going to leave that analogy there before it becomes even more ridiculous. Another downside to this is that there may not be so much people interaction, which if you're a people person, might be a bit of a downside. But hey, if you're someone who wants to be as free as possible and be as beholden to as few people as possible, if not nobody, then trading investing is kind of like the ultimate pursuit, because you do not need to speak to anyone. I can't really think of any other pursuit that involves speaking to no one. If that's what you want, if you want to keep your work and pleasure separate, I'm a big fan of that. I love to go out and have a good time. I love my friends to bits. But for some reason, I'm personally just a little bit averse to sort of working with my friends. I have some amazing friends who are like in my mastermind group, who we meet up, we talk kind of about business related things, personal development related things. But it's not business per se. I'd far rather have those kinds of meetings than the kind of bullshit corporate time wasting meetings that you have in offices where nothing really gets done and everyone just chats, or they just, talk for half an hour about something that could have been achieved in 5 minutes. Not for me. So in that respect, trading investing is a really, it's a bonus. You don't actually really have to deal with anyone at all if you don't want to. And it's also largely passive. So apart from making good decisions, there isn't a lot of grinding. Research, yes. Research can be enjoyable, though. If you like researching, it's great. But also you can make decisions purely on technical analysis, purely on looking at graphs. The research is great for your fundamental analysis, but provided you know how to read graphs and you're very skilled and practiced at that, even the research, it might not be necessary. I know of guys who do nothing but technical analysis and are insanely profitable, insanely good traders. They've got thousands of hours experience, but they make a very good living. So there you go, guys. As a side point on that last one, investing, I would say that even if it's not your main venture, it's really worth investigating what are viable sources of investment for say, like, if you want to put aside a few hundred pounds a month or a percentage of your income a month, what are worthwhile investments? Is it bullion? Is it crypto? Is it stocks and shares? That is a piece of your education that's very much worth looking into, regardless of what you're doing as your primary pursuit of freedom. So that's it. That's my seven. There are, however, a couple of special mentions, which I'll gloss over very quickly. Property. Not an online business, but if freedom is what you want, online business is merely the means of getting there. Property might be something worth looking at. I've got a property on Airbnb right now. Seems to be working okay. It's early days. But there are people making good cash flow business out of property. Obviously, there's a big capital requirement, which can't really be avoided unless you, again, go in with someone else who has the capital and maybe you just operate it. Special mention B is simply any business, right? Why does business have to be bricks and mortar? If you're selling something in the flesh, fine. But I would make the bold claim that most brick and mortar businesses today, things that are corporate businesses, could, but maybe should go online a little bit more. They should decentralize a little bit. They should go location independent. They should really think about outsourcing way, way more, cutting out unnecessary bureaucracy, cutting out dead wood. They would absolutely excel. Look at companies. Look at a company called Jungle Scout. Jungle Scout make really good Amazon software, and they are an entirely location independent business. They have people working for them from all over the world, and that's just how they were built from the ground up. It makes it a bit easier if you start with that in mind. But these are the kinds of businesses that are really going to overtake the burdensome process-led businesses that exist today with 10 times the number of people that they actually need. So any business, right, can really be an online business, in my view. And that is basically it for me, guys. So look, I hope that was useful. The intention there was just to give you a high-level overview. If you're just new to this whole thing, got a vague idea of that you want to build an online business, that's it in a nutshell. That encompasses, in my view, pretty much all the options available to you. Each one of those areas is huge. You know, any one of those it could be the subject of an entire, you know, channel, and even sub niches within them. There's just so much within each of those. But I hope that's given you a useful overview in terms of giving some direction and helping you understand where you might want to point your focus next, where you might want to learn more, what you might want to learn more about. I made this video for my friend and people in his position. I really hope it's helpful. If it is helpful, please leave me a comment. It means a lot to me to know that you found value in it. And hey, look, that's all for me. Don't forget to subscribe, and I'll chat to you next time.